October 15th, 1974, Overland Park, Kansas. 32-year-old businessman Gary Simmons leaves his office in order to purchase a horse from a man named Tom Dixon. Later that day, Gary provides authorization for Dixon to cash a $30,000 check, but he is never heard from again, and Dixon also disappears after collecting the money. 17 years later, Gary's skeletal remains are discovered inside a cave, and it turns out he has been shot in the head. While Dixon is believed to be involved in Gary's murder, he is never tracked down, and investigators suspect that the whole thing was orchestrated by an unknown third party. After that, the trail went cold. Hello everyone, and welcome to our latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host Robin Warder, and today we're going to be covering a very bizarre case which was once featured on Unsolved Mysteries, the 1974 murder of Gary Simmons. The reason I'm covering it now is because the weekend after the release of this episode, the True Crime Podcast Festival is taking place in Kansas City, Missouri, and this particular story happened to occur in the Kansas City metropolitan area. Unfortunately, since the Canada-United States border is still closed for non-essential travel due to COVID, I will be unable to personally attend the festival, but I've been wanting to do an episode about this case for quite some time, and given the whole Kansas City connection, this seems like the perfect opportunity. Gary Simmons was a prominent businessman who lived in Overland Park, Kansas, before he vanished without a trace, and his skeletal remains would be discovered across the state line 17 years later, inside a cave in Independence, Missouri. On the day of his disappearance, Gary had met up with a man named Tom Dixon to supposedly purchase a horse from him, but it's been theorized that the whole thing was a setup in order to scam Gary out of $30,000 before he was murdered. But what really complicates this case is that Tom Dixon also vanished without a trace, and there have been no confirmed sightings of him since 1974. Well, the most logical explanation is that Dixon took the $30,000 and disappeared to start a new life, this story is a lot more convoluted than it looks on the surface. There's a lot about this case which does not make any sense, and one theory is that Dixon was just a cog in an elaborate murder plot orchestrated by an unknown third party, who subsequently got rid of Dixon after he outlived his usefulness. Indeed, the original Unsolved Mystery segment left out some key details about this story, some of which only managed to provide more confusion. So we're going to perform our own in-depth exploration on today's episode. However, before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which is currently available for download on several platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or a review on any of those sites to help spread the word and garner us more exposure. The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you would like to learn how to support the show, please visit our page at patreon.com/thetrailwentcold. For as little as $1 a month, you can garner access to exclusive rewards, which may include stickers and thank you cards, early access to episodes, and bonus content. So with all that out of the way, let us now perform a deep dive into the unsolved murder of Gary Simmons. Our story begins in 1974 in Overland Park, Kansas, which is located in Johnson County right next to the Missouri state line and is one of the suburbs of the Kansas City metropolitan area. Our central figure is 32-year-old Gary Simmons, who lives with his wife Nancy and their son and daughter on a large ranch in a rural area just outside Overland Park. Gary is the president and owner of Simmons Petroleum Corporation, which operates a chain of independent gas stations in Kansas City and he has a reputation in the community for being a hard-working, self-made man. Gary's biggest hobby is horse trading, as he owns and raises 23 horses on his ranch and is a member of numerous local horse clubs. On the morning of October the 15th, Gary went to his office in Overland Park and had a meeting with a 42-year-old man named Tom Dixon, whom he had spoken to on the phone the previous day. Dixon lived with his family in a rural home in the unincorporated community of Stillwell and was known for working various jobs, such as a painter, contractor, and carnival operator. He claimed that he was acting as the agent for a man who was selling a purebred Appaloosa horse for $30,000, and Gary was interested in purchasing it. At 10:15 a.m., Gary told his secretary, Jody Miller, that he would be back within an hour or so before he and Dixon left the office together. Gary never told Jody where he was going, but 15 minutes after he left, Jody received a phone call from him. Gary instructed her to make out a $30,000 check to Tom Dixon, which he would be picking up shortly. Sure enough, Dixon returned to the office a half hour later in order to retrieve the check and told Jody he would be meeting up with Gary again in order to get his signature on it. Around the same time he phoned Jody, Gary placed another call to J. Thomas Burcham, the president of the Santa Fe Trail Bank in the suburb of Merriam. Gary was scheduled to have a meeting there at 10:30 with a representative from the McKee Oil Company, who had made a business deal with Simmons Petroleum Corporation. Gary would receive a payment of over $100,000 for the deal, but he asked Burcham if they could postpone the meeting until 1 p.m., and the McKee representative agreed to this. Shortly before noon, Burcham received another phone call from Gary, who informed him that a man named Tom Dixon would be arriving shortly with a $30,000 check he had received for the purchase of a horse. Gary said he would not be present, but he wanted to grant his approval for Dixon to cash the check, and since Burcham was a personal friend who considered Gary to be one of the bank's top customers, he had no issues with this. Burcham would later say that he recognized Gary's voice on the phone and did not detect anything unusual from him. It wasn't long before Dixon showed up at the bank with a signed $30,000 check, and since Burcham had seen Gary's signature on several previous occasions, he had no reason to believe it wasn't legitimate. Burcham asked Dixon if he would be interested in opening up an account with them, but Dixon declined, claiming that he needed the money to pay off some debts. Since the bank did not have the entire $30,000 in cash, Burcham gave Dixon $5,000 in $100 bills and the rest of the balance in a cashier's check. Dixon subsequently took the check to the Commercial National Bank of Kansas City and received the remaining $25,000 in $100 bills. At 12:45 p.m., Burcham's secretary received a phone call from Gary, who told her that he would be a little late for his 1 o'clock meeting with the McKee Oil representative. However, Gary did not show up for the meeting at all and was never heard from again. He also did not return to his office, and when he failed to come home by the following morning, his wife Nancy contacted the Overland Park Police Department and reported Gary missing. At the time of his disappearance, Gary had been driving his silver Lincoln Continental Mark IV, but the vehicle could also not be found. While Gary's phone call to Burcham's secretary was the last time he was confirmed to be alive, the last reported eyewitness sighting of Gary was from the owner of a truck stop located 10 miles from Gary's office. The sighting occurred at 11:30 a.m. on the morning of October the 15th, just over an hour before his final phone call, and the truck stop owner claimed that Gary was pacing back and forth between the counter and the window, and he appeared to be waiting for someone. When police spoke to Tom Dixon's wife Shirley, they learned he had also not returned home on the evening of October the 15th, and no one knew where he was. It turned out that earlier that morning, during the time period he met with Gary, Dixon was supposed to meet up with the owners of Bob's Salvage Yard in Independence, Missouri, as they happened to be friends of his. According to one of the owners, Bob Williams, Dixon had told them he had recently purchased some junked cars in Waverly, and they were planning to go pick them up in order to bring them to the salvage yard. Dixon finally arrived at the yard between 5 and 5:30 p.m., and after apologizing for not showing up that morning, he spent the next several hours hanging around there and helping out the employees with some work. At around 11 o'clock, Dixon told Williams he was going to call home, but they never saw him again, as he presumably left without telling them. Dixon's abandoned pickup truck would soon be discovered at the Quality Oil Company truck stop on U.S. Route 69 with the keys in the ignition. Police eventually spoke to a friend of Dixon's named Tom Callahan, who claimed that on the morning of October the 16th, Dixon called him at home to ask for assistance because his pickup truck had broken down at the truck stop. When Callahan drove there to pick him up, Dixon asked if he could borrow Callahan's own pickup truck for a few hours in order to conduct some, quote-unquote, personal business. Callahan agreed to the request, and after he was dropped off at his home, Dixon left in Callahan's truck and returned about 2 hours later. Dixon told Callahan that he had just been hired to be the driver of a cross-country rig and asked for a ride to the Heart of America Truck Plaza, located near Interstate 35 in the suburb of Olathe. Callahan said that he drove Dixon to the truck plaza and dropped him off at around 1:30 p.m., but this was the last time he ever saw him. However, Shirley Dixon claimed she received a call from her husband at around 3 o'clock that same afternoon. By this point, Nancy Simmons had already reported Gary missing, and the police had asked Shirley about her husband's potential involvement. When Shirley asked Tom who Gary Simmons was, he confirmed that he had met up with Gary, but had not seen him since the previous day. Before he ended the call, Dixon told his wife that he was coming in from Arkansas and would return home that evening, but he never did, and this would turn out to be the last time he was confirmed to be alive. The investigation revealed that Gary and Tom Dixon were both members of the Heart of America Horse Association, but there was no indication the two men knew each other before they met at Gary's office on the morning of October the 15th. Gary's secretary, Jody Miller, also said that she overheard part of their conversation where Gary told Dixon, quote, "I don't remember you." Even though Gary owned 23 horses, most of them were inexpensive Appaloosa broodmares, and he had never paid a price as high as $30,000. Nancy found it odd that her husband would have agreed to make such a large purchase without consulting her first, and she claimed to have no idea who Tom Dixon was. Gary had also written the check to Dixon on a rarely used general business account he had at the bank, which contained exactly $30,000. As for Dixon, he was in serious debt at the time of his disappearance, as two houses he had been constructing were unfinished, and the firms holding the mortgages on them were granted judgments totaling about $150,000 in foreclosure proceedings, which would force Dixon's family to move out of their home. On April the 22nd, 1975, 6 months after Gary's disappearance, the Lee's Summit Underwater Recovery Unit arrived at Labonite Park in the suburb of Sugar Creek after a confidential tip was phoned in that a Cadillac had recently been dumped in the Missouri River. While searching the water, the recovery unit wound up discovering a submerged Lincoln Continental, which turned out to be Gary Simmons' missing vehicle. It was found about 100 yards from a boat ramp, and it appeared that someone placed a rock on the accelerator to intentionally drive the car into the river. The aforementioned Cadillac would also be found, but it turned out to have no connection to the case, and it was just an odd coincidence that it happened to be in the water so close to Gary's Lincoln Continental. Even though Gary had gone missing from Kansas, the discovery of the car over the state line in Missouri technically made it a federal case, so the FBI became involved in the investigation. However, they had no success at turning up any trace of Gary or Tom Dixon, and after officially being missing for 7 years, Gary was legally declared dead in October of 1981. But one decade later, the investigator would be rejuvenated in a most unexpected fashion. On October the 16th, 1991, one day after the 17-year anniversary of Gary's disappearance, a school bus driver named Tyrone Rollins was working at his company's bus yard in Independence, Missouri. Tyrone claimed he always had a quote-unquote eerie feeling about the rocky outcroppings located behind the bus yard, and on this particular day, he decided to climb them and go exploring after being overcome with what he described as a weird premonition. When Tyrone reached the north side of the hill, he noticed a hidden cave and decided to venture inside with a flashlight. To his shock, he soon discovered a pair of cowboy boots alongside a human skeleton which was clad in decaying clothing. After the police were summoned to the scene, they found Gary Simmons' driver's license in the victim's pants pocket. Dental records would eventually be used to positively identify the victim as Gary, and it turned out he had been shot once in the head. Since a canvas cloth was discovered inside the cave, this seemed to indicate that Gary had been murdered elsewhere before his body was placed there. This type of cloth was commonly used by painters, which had been one of Tom Dixon's jobs before he disappeared, so that was another piece of evidence which seemed to point towards Dixon being the perpetrator. The whole situation compelled Tyrone to send a letter to Unsolved Mysteries, requesting them to feature Gary's case on their show. They decided to cover the story on an episode, which aired on April the 8th, 1992, but while they were filming this segment, a local rancher named Roy Hilton came forward and shared some surprising new information. For years, the authorities assumed that Dixon's so-called horse deal was bogus and used as a ruse to scam Gary out of $30,000 before he was murdered. However, Hilton knew both men personally and claimed that he saw Gary at the Whispering Downs Horse Ranch on the same day he went missing. Hilton said that Gary personally showed him the horse he was planning to buy, and that he also witnessed Gary make two phone calls from the ranch. The call to his secretary, asking her to make out a $30,000 check for Dixon, and his call to the bank, authorizing Dixon to cash it. In addition to Hilton's new information, investigators were taken by surprise when they decided to re-interview Bob Williams, the co-owner of Bob's Salvage Yard, who revised his original story about his interactions with Tom Dixon that day. Williams now claimed that Dixon arrived at the salvage yard in a Lincoln Continental and inquired about the possibility of using the yard's car crusher to get rid of it. Williams said that this would attract a lot of attention and advised Dixon that the easiest way to make the car disappear would be to put a brick on the accelerator and drive it off a boat ramp into the Missouri River. Well, sure enough, the spot where Gary's Lincoln Continental was found in the river 6 months later was only 5 miles from the salvage yard. As a result of Williams' new story, police were able to issue a new arrest warrant charging Dixon with auto theft, though they lacked the evidence to charge him with murder. For years, an alternate theory which had been presented for Gary's disappearance was that he had been murdered over black market gasoline. In October of 1973, the United States and several other nations were hit with an oil crisis when members of the Organization of Arab Petroleum Exporting Countries proclaimed an oil embargo. By the time the embargo ended 5 months later, the price of oil had increased by nearly 300%, which had a serious financial impact on many people in the industry. This included the Simmons Petroleum Corporation, as the embargo caused Gary's regular suppliers to be cut off, and he was forced to buy gasoline from other suppliers at inflated prices. At the time, Gary had been operating a chain of 16 gas stations, but he was unable to purchase enough fuel to keep them all supplied, forcing him to close many of the stations. Indeed, the oil crisis forced a number of independent operators to purchase gasoline from illegal vendors at inflated prices in order to keep their businesses afloat. At one point, Gary's family hired a private investigator who uncovered information which made him suspect that Gary was killed because he was scheduled to testify as part of a federal U.S. Department of Energy investigation into black market gasoline sales. Gary could have purchased gasoline from a source without even knowing it was black market, but once he found out and spoke out about it, his life was put in danger. However, the authorities never found any evidence to suggest that Gary was involved in anything illegal, and his family did not believe he ever would have purchased black market gasoline. Even though Gary had experienced economic hardship, business had started picking up for him again in 1974. He was able to reopen some of his gas stations, and at the time he went missing, 10 of them were in operation. One theory investigators did believe was that Tom Dixon was not the sole mastermind behind Gary's disappearance, as they did not think he had the smarts to orchestrate an elaborate murder plot on his own. They suspected that Dixon might have been hired by an unknown third party, who subsequently double-crossed Dixon and killed him as well before disposing of his body. Even though it was never conclusively proven if Dixon was alive or dead, there has been no paper trail for him since 1974. He is technically still a wanted fugitive for the auto theft charge, and if Dixon is still alive today, he will be turning 90 years old next year. But until Tom Dixon or any other evidence can be found, the murder of Gary Simmons will continue to remain unsolved. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. So like I mentioned in the intro, I was only familiar with the case from the Unsolved Mystery segment, but once I started researching it, it wound up being a lot more complicated than I was expecting. The original segment is structured in an odd way, as the first few minutes focus on Tyrone Rollins' so-called premonition, which led him to discovering Gary Simmons' skeleton inside a cave. You initially get the impression that it's going to be some sort of paranormal-themed segment about people's alleged psychic abilities, but then the entire side story about Tyrone Rollins is dropped, and the segment morphs into a pretty compelling story about an unsolved murder. But the section with Tyrone is still pretty bizarre, because seemingly on a whim, he just decided to explore a hidden cave and stumble across the remains of a person who had been missing for 17 years. I can see how that might come across as suspicious, but given that Tyrone still would have been a young kid at the time Gary was murdered, there's no reason to believe he was involved, though I'm sure it must have been pretty awkward to explain the situation to the police. However, reading the original newspaper articles about Tyrone's discovery, they reported that exploring random caves was a hobby of his, and this is why he just happened to find the skeleton. Given that Tyrone was the one who brought this case to the attention of Unsolved Mysteries in the first place by writing them a letter, you have to wonder if he might have decided to exaggerate this premonition stuff to help ensure the case would be featured on the program and he would get interviewed on national television. But Unsolved Mysteries was not the only media outlet who attempted to sensationalize this part of the story. If you do a search online, you'll find an article about this case in the January 14, 1992 edition of the infamous tabloid, The Weekly World News. They mentioned that when Gary went missing, a psychic apparently once said that he would be found in a quote-unquote cold dark place, and well, he was found in a cold dark place. However, I might have to question the credibility of this story a little bit, considering that the main headline of this particular edition of the Weekly World News was Loch Ness Monster Captured. So I think we can now move away from the psychic premonition angle of this case and start focusing on the actual crime. This story is actually two mysteries rolled into one, since Tom Dixon, the person who was suspected of killing Gary, has not been seen at all since 1974. However, since there was no evidence to conclusively prove that Dixon committed murder, all the authorities could really do was charge him with auto theft for allegedly stealing and disposing of Gary's car. Looking back, it seems a bit odd that the Unsolved Mystery segment provided so little information about Dixon's background, as all they really did was showcase this old black and white photograph of Dixon and ask viewers to contact the authorities if they saw him. This initially gave me the impression that he was this mysterious, enigmatic figure who was just passing through the area to perform this elaborate con job slash murder before he disappeared with the $30,000 he received. In fact, I wondered if Tom Dixon was even his real name. But while researching this case, it took me by complete surprise to find out that Dixon was an established figure in the community with a wife and kids who lived in Johnson County, only about 6 miles from Gary's ranch. The fact that Dixon broke off all contact with his own family would seem to lend credence to the theory that he was killed a short time after Gary was. As far as I can tell, Dixon's family have not spoken much to the media since he originally went missing, and they were not interviewed during the Unsolved Mystery segment. But it sounds like they have no idea what happened to him. I also get the impression that Dixon was just an ordinary blue-collar worker who worked a number of different jobs in order to support his family, and I haven't heard anything about him having a criminal history prior to these events. The authorities do not believe Dixon was sophisticated enough to dream up an elaborate murder plot, but it sounds like he was in serious debt at the time he went missing. So if he was desperate enough for money, I could see Dixon being roped into doing something illegal by a third party before this person subsequently got rid of him. But who could have been the mastermind behind the whole thing, and what was their motive? While I am definitely inclined to believe there's more to this story than Gary simply being scammed out of $30,000 through a bogus horse deal, I know Gary's friends and family always portrayed him as an honest, hard-working, self-made businessman who earned everything he attained, and that very well might be true. But there's just something off about the way the events on the day of his disappearance unfolded, and the timeline doesn't make a whole lot of sense. After he went missing, Gary's loved ones said that he once told them he had this specific fear about being kidnapped and forced to write checks against his will. Those sound like the words of a person who would be overly cautious about being manipulated and scammed by other people, yet they also seem to be at odds with Gary's actions before he went missing. One key piece of information not mentioned on Unsolved Mysteries was that Gary had a meeting planned with a representative from the McKee Oil Company that morning. He was said to be paid over $100,000 for a business deal they had made, and according to Gary's wife, Nancy, he seemed to be in a really good mood over this when she last saw him leave their house. The meeting was originally scheduled for 10:30 a.m., a short time after Tom Dixon showed up in Gary's office, and Gary would soon request that the meeting be postponed until 1 p.m. Now, from what I've read about him, this sort of thing was very uncharacteristic for Gary, as he was known for being a very punctual and organized person, and if he ever scheduled an appointment with someone, they could almost always rely on him to show up on time. Yet when Tom Dixon made his first appearance, Gary seemed to rearrange his entire schedule to accommodate him, postponing a meeting where he was set to receive $100,000 so he could pay $30,000 for a horse. Was there a reason Gary could not hold off on this until after his transaction with the McKee Oil representative was completed? Yes, Gary loved purchasing and raising horses, but it sounds like none of the ones he owned cost nearly as much as $30,000, which is the equivalent of around $163,000 today. And Nancy said it was very out of character for Gary to make such a large purchase without speaking to her about it first. The money was also withdrawn from a rarely used account, which contained exactly $30,000, so you almost get the impression that Gary was keeping it there for a specific purpose. The story provided by Gary's secretary is that the two men left the office together at 10:15 a.m., and it was about 15 minutes later when Gary phoned her and asked that she drop a $30,000 check for Dixon. This is definitely a major red flag for me, because it seems pretty odd that Gary would travel to another location, look at the horse, and then agree to purchase it within a span of only 15 minutes. I mean, I've personally never gone through the process of purchasing or selling a horse, but I've heard it's standard procedure to have a veterinarian or trainer examine the animal to make sure it's in good condition before you decide to plant down a large amount of money for it. As far as I know, Gary had not seen Dixon's horse before that day, and you'd expect an intelligent, experienced businessman like him to perform a lot more due diligence before agreeing to hand over $30,000. So you can understand why there's been speculation that the so-called horse deal was a bogus cover story, and Gary was paying all that money to Dixon for entirely different reasons. However, what really complicates this situation is the story provided by Roy Hilton, who claimed that he saw Gary at the Whispering Downs Horse Ranch that morning, and even said that Gary personally showed him the horse he was planning to buy. I don't know much about Hilton's background, but I can see how there might be skepticism about his story, since he did not come forward until 17 years after the fact, after he found out that Unsolved Mysteries was producing a segment. This case got a lot of coverage in the local media back in 1974, so why wouldn't have Hilton shared this information back then? But if Hilton was telling the truth, that opens up a lot more unanswered questions and really muddles the timeline. The details are a bit murky, but it sounds like Gary had spoken to Dixon on the phone before their initial meeting, and Dixon told him he was acting as an agent for the horse's original owner and was planning to sell it on their behalf. Even though Gary and Dixon were members of the same horse association and Dixon owned horses himself, he does not strike me as someone who would have been wealthy enough to own a $30,000 thoroughbred. Roy Hilton claimed that Gary showed him the horse he was planning to purchase, but who did it actually belong to? Was Dixon really acting as an agent for the horse's owner? Or did Dixon bring Gary to the ranch and show him some other person's thoroughbred in order to trick him into handing over $30,000? I initially assumed that when Gary phoned his secretary and asked her to drop a $30,000 check for Dixon, and then phoned the Santa Fe Trail Bank to authorize Dixon to cash the check, he made both those calls under duress while someone was holding him hostage. Yet Hilton claimed he witnessed Gary make the calls of his own accord from a phone at the horse ranch. And the bank president, J. Thomas Burcham, also maintained that he did not notice anything unusual about Gary's voice when he spoke to him on the phone about Dixon cashing the check. So this does suggest that Gary genuinely believed the horse deal was legitimate. Even so, if Gary wasn't being held against his will, I find it odd that he wouldn't have accompanied Dixon back to his office when he picked up the check, since it required Gary's signature. Furthermore, why didn't Gary accompany Dixon to the bank when he cashed the check, particularly since his meeting with the McKee oil representative was supposed to take place there right after this transaction was completed? To add even more confusion, there's also the eyewitness sighting from the truck stop owner who said he saw Gary there at around 11:30 a.m., where he appeared to be waiting for someone. Looking at the timeline, Gary's call to his secretary took place at around 10:30, and the call to the bank occurred shortly before noon. If both of these calls were made from the horse ranch, what would Gary be doing at a truck stop at 11:30? If Gary really was meeting someone there, then this might explain why he did not accompany Dixon to his office and the bank. But of course, the alternate explanation is that the truck stop owner was simply mistaken. He could have seen an entirely different man who looked like Gary, or saw Gary there on a previous occasion prior to October the 15th and got the dates mixed up. We do know that the last confirmed communication from Gary was his phone call to Burcham's secretary at the bank, where he asked her to inform the McKee oil representative that he was going to be a bit late for the 1 o'clock meeting, which he never showed up for. Assuming that Gary didn't make the call under duress, this seems to indicate that he was planning to make the meeting, but something happened to him shortly after the call ended, and he eventually wound up inside a cave across the state line with a gunshot wound to the head. After leaving the bank sometime between noon and 1 p.m., Dixon was next seen at Bob's salvage yard in Gary's Lincoln Continental about 5 hours later. Dixon's whereabouts during that window of time have never been accounted for, but you have to assume that's when Gary's murder took place, though the circumstances of how or where it happened are still unclear. It would be nearly 24 hours before Dixon himself went missing, but the problem is that the eyewitnesses who interacted with them during that time period do not seem particularly reliable or trustworthy. One section of the Unsolved Mystery segment which always used to crack me up was the reenactment where Dixon drives Gary's car to the salvage yard and asks the owner about getting rid of it, and he just casually replies, "Well, put a brick on the accelerator and drive it into the Missouri River." Wow, that's really stellar customer service there, giving people advice on how to cover up a potential crime. However, the situation made a lot more sense to me once I learned that Dixon was actually good friends with the salvage yard owner, Bob Williams, and it was apparently not uncommon for Dixon to bring them junked cars to destroy. However, the big issue is that Williams completely changed his original story 17 years after the fact. He always acknowledged that Dixon showed up at the salvage yard that day and spent several hours there hanging around and helping out with odd jobs. But it wasn't until after Gary's body was discovered when Williams decided to tell the authorities that Dixon had driven there in a Lincoln Continental and asked for advice on how to get rid of it. Like I just mentioned, it wasn't uncommon for Dixon to deliver cars to the salvage yard, so I can see why this might not have raised Williams' eyebrows at first. But it was pretty big news in the area when Gary's Lincoln Continental turned up in the Missouri River 6 months later. If Williams really did advise Dixon to do this, you'd think he would have put two and two together and said something much earlier. I guess it's possible that Williams initially stayed silent in order to avoid incriminating himself, but once it was officially confirmed that Gary was a murder victim, he decided to come clean. Williams said that Dixon left the salvage yard at around 11 p.m. that night after saying he was going to call home, but his wife Shirley said he never did come home. We still don't know what Dixon's whereabouts were that night, but it's reasonable to assume he spent some of that time dumping the Continental in the river and possibly disposing of Gary's body. Shirley did confirm that she spoke to her husband on the phone the following afternoon, and he gave off the impression he was planning to return home that night, but he was never heard from again. So was Dixon murdered shortly after he made that call? Well, now we have to talk about one of the most interesting wild cards in this case, and that's Dixon's friend, Tom Callahan. Even though he had been seen in the Lincoln Continental, Dixon ordinarily drove a pickup truck, which was found abandoned at the Quality Oil Company truck stop, and Callahan claimed that Dixon asked him to pick him up there after the truck broke down. As you recall, Callahan said that Dixon asked to borrow his pickup truck to go off and take care of some business for a few hours, and afterward, Callahan drove Dixon to the Heart of America truck plaza and dropped him off. But the problem is that investigators could not find any witnesses who recalled seeing Dixon at the truck plaza that day, and we technically only have Callahan's word that these events unfolded this way. During the original stages of the investigation, the authorities did not have any reason to be suspicious of Callahan, but he would subsequently become uncooperative. Following the discovery of Gary's remains 17 years later, investigators announced that they had since uncovered new information. It turned out that in the hours following Gary's disappearance, both Dixon and Callahan had paid off some bills in cash, and Callahan was also apparently seen spending sizable amounts of money days after Dixon went missing. However, by this point, Callahan could not be reinvestigated since he died in 1982. Now, I don't know anything else about Callahan's background, so I'm not going to outright accuse him of being involved in Gary's murder. It's possible that the reason Callahan was seen spending so much money was because Dixon gave it to him during their interactions together, and Callahan had no idea where it came from. But the $30,000 Dixon received when he cashed Gary's check has still never been accounted for. I also find it odd that Dixon's pickup truck was discovered at the truck stop with the keys still in the ignition. If it broke down there, and Dixon called Callahan to pick him up, why would he leave his keys behind instead of taking them with him? This does suggest that the truck might have been planted there by someone else, which would mean Callahan is lying. Like I previously mentioned, investigators have always suspected that Gary's death was an elaborate murder plot orchestrated by an unknown third party, and Dixon was their patsy. I'm not trying to say that Callahan was the mastermind behind the whole thing, but it is interesting how he was technically the last person to have seen Dixon alive, and there's nothing to really corroborate his story. But regardless of who the mastermind really was, I wonder if they chose to hire Dixon because he was a member of the same horse association as Gary, which would have added some credence to the bogus horse deal story. One reason I do think it's likely that Dixon was murdered by a third party is that unless he just wanted to disappear and start a new life, he completely cut off all contact with his family and left them in the lurch. It's possible that Dixon's debts were his motivation for participating in this scheme, as he was apparently seen paying off some bills after he got his hands on $30,000 in cash. But when Dixon disappeared, his family was eventually forced to move out of their home due to foreclosure, so he obviously didn't pay all his bills. It really doesn't make sense for Dixon to partially pay off his debts and then run away, so I get the impression that someone got to him. It's possible this entire crime was financially motivated, but the alternate theory which has been pushed forward is that Gary was killed because he had become involved in the purchase of black market gasoline. Indeed, if Gary was planning to purchase some fuel on the black market, this might explain why he went through the whole ruse of telling people he was buying a horse and asked his secretary to drop a $30,000 check for Dixon within 15 minutes of them leaving the office. If it wasn't for Roy Hilton's sightings of Gary at the horse ranch, I would have no trouble believing that this $30,000 payment was for something he did not want anyone else finding out about. But on the other hand, investigators never found any evidence that Gary was involved in black market gasoline, and the timing just doesn't fit. This was about a year after the oil embargo originally began, and even though Gary experienced some financial hardships, he had since gotten his business back on track and reopened some of his gas stations. Not to mention that he was set to receive a $100,000 payment from McKee Oil that very same day. So there's no reason for Gary to be purchasing fuel on the black market on this particular day. I know that a private investigator hired by Gary's family expressed his belief that Gary was killed because he was planning to testify in a federal investigation into black market gasoline, but you would think that something like that would be easy to verify. After all, the FBI became involved in the investigation the following year, and I don't believe they ever turned up anything to suggest that Gary was involved in something like that. Besides, if Gary was murdered to keep him from talking, why go through the risky and elaborate ruse of conning him out of $30,000 instead of just simply killing him. I don't know, I just can't help but feel there's a big piece of the puzzle missing here. I certainly don't want to accuse Gary of anything, since it sounds like he had a very stellar reputation as both a businessman and a person, but I have to wonder if there was something going on in his life that not even his closest friends or family members knew about. I still have a hard time imagining that Gary would have authorized the payment of a $30,000 check that quickly to purchase a horse, so I can't help but feel that it must have been a cover for something. But on the other hand, maybe Gary truly was an innocent victim who got conned and murdered for his money. The key to this mystery is definitely Tom Dixon, but for all we know, he may be a skeleton lying undiscovered in another cave right now. If Dixon was also murdered, there might be someone else out there who has continued to get away with orchestrating this whole thing, but since so much time has passed, I'm not sure if we'll ever learn the full truth. All that being said, if you happen to have any information about the murder of Gary Simmons or the disappearance of Tom Dixon, please contact the appropriate authorities. But if you just have your own thoughts about what happened, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email to robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Now, the reminder that The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so please visit patreon.com/thetrailwentcold to learn how you can support our podcast and become eligible for some pretty neat rewards. We produced a bunch of exclusive bonus episodes for our patrons in tiers 2 and 3, and this past month, I released a fun special episode in which I counted down my top 10 personal favorite acting performances, which took place reenactments on Unsolved Mysteries. And for our patrons in Tier 3, I've also recorded another new audio commentary track, which can be played over a classic episode of Unsolved Mysteries. I'd also like to give a shout out to our most recent listener who signed up with us on Patreon this week, Shelley Radin. So thank you very much, Shelley. Also, even though I cannot appear at the True Crime Podcast Festival this coming weekend, The Trail Went Cold is still planning to appear on Podcast Row at the very first CrimeCon UK, which is being held at the Leonardo Royal Hotel and Spa in London on the weekend of September the 25th and 26th. If you would like to purchase tickets to the event, we have a special promo code you can use to get a 10% discount. So to receive 10% off, visit crimecon.co.uk and enter the promo code COLD21. That's COLD21. By the way, even though I usually provide a plug for my Get Vocal livestream sessions at this point, I wanted to mention that I won't be holding one this week, because this coming Thursday is Canada Day, so I'll be taking that day off. But I will return to hold our weekly session starting next Thursday, July the 8th. I just wanted to give another shout out to my supporters at the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. I need to provide a big thanks to Miguel Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. So have yourself a good week and join us next Wednesday for another brand new episode of The Trail Went Cold. And